This podcast contains content that will not be suitable for all ages and will contain graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
You are now listening to Beyond Evil, a true crime podcast hosted by Kimberly Carroll. Together, we will explore the dossiers of some of the world's most evil criminals and the crimes they have committed, based on court documents and news reports. This podcast will not be glorifying the accused or convicted, nor will the victims be exploited or further victimized. If you go beyond this point and like what you hear, please subscribe and tell a friend.
Welcome, welcome, and welcome back to Beyond Evil, a true crime podcast. I am your host, Kimberly Carroll, and thank you for spending your time with me. You are listening to part two of a two-part series on the Adrian Jones case. I strongly suggest listening to part one first. Once again, this is a true crime podcast. It's never sugar and spice. However, cases involving minors are always horrific, so please heed this final trigger warning. To recap, we left off July 13th after the sixth call to Child Services in Kansas and the second call to Child Services in Missouri. That investigation found a multitude of evidence that Adrian was a victim of neglect. Missouri records show welfare officials said they didn't think they could ensure the safety of Adrian in the home with his father. A county juvenile officer suggested the family be provided more services instead of removing Adrian from the home. After a consultation with the juvenile officer, DSS determined Adrian would be removed, but not until they tried one more time to provide intensive in-home service, IIS for short. Also, family-centered services would be provided, FCS. Both these services are to prevent abuse and neglect. DSS assigned Kaylee Fewins to provide IIS services, and she would be supervised by Julie King. On July 19, 2013, a committee was formed for the IIS services. A screening would be held in the Jones home. In attendance will be a juvenile officer, two caseworkers, one supervisor, along with Michael and Heather Jones. Results of that screening were as followed. Adrian had serious mental health problems. Adrian needed counseling and a new prescription for medication. Adrian had an immediate need for psychiatric medication management. Adrian needed a psychological evaluation and play therapy. Heather and Michael needed child management education. It was determined that Adrian would not be locked in a room anymore from this point forward. It was also determined that alarms were needed for the doors. The final remarks were that Adrian was in immediate risk of physical abuse. After the approval to be in the program, the Joneses would only meet two times with the IIS services. That would be on July 22nd and July 23rd, which were held in their home. After that, Michael would call caseworker Fewins on August 1st to inform her that they would no longer be taking part in the program and that they were moving to Kansas. On that same day, Fewins closed the Missouri case and terminated services. The cause was indicated to be family moved to Kansas. This was all done without verification or getting a new address to pass along to DCS in Kansas. On August 9th, 2013, a Missouri caseworker, Sarah Reagan, made a seventh call to the hotline. She reported that the IIS and FCS services were open in Missouri, but that the father and the stepmother did not cooperate. They did not keep appointments or schedule any of the services that were determined necessary. The parents claim that they are now living in Kansas, but that has not been confirmed. Sarah would go on to say that there were continued concerns for Adrian, including his mental health, his physical health, and his schooling. It is a very high risk for homeschoolers to be abused and not reported. Not too much longer after that call, on August 21st, another call came into the DCSS office. This call reported, no medical treatment is provided. Adrian is still being locked in his room at night, and Heather Jones is targeting him for abuse. At this time, Missouri notified Kansas by calling the hotline. Based on that eighth call, Missouri assigned an investigator. This investigator, her name was Mari Wheeler. Her supervisor was Michael Beetsma. The assignment on the case was marked priority response level one, which is the highest level of emergency for child abuse. Action must be taken within 3 hours and a law enforcement must be contacted for assistance. On the 21st, a caseworker, a law enforcement officer, went to the Plattsburgh home, where the caseworker documented that Heather, the stepmother, did not want the caseworker to enter the home. She finally relented and stated she was instructed to discontinue Adrian's medication because his father did not have medical coverage. The father had not arranged medical care. Heather claimed she was instructed to lock Adrian in the bedroom at night. She also denied telling DSS that they were moving to Kansas. However, she did state that they do not need the services from the IIS team. On the same day, caseworker Wheeler documented a high-level risk factor for Adrian, but left him in the home. On October 7th, that same caseworker would determine a case would not be opened, even though all attempts to provide the required services to Adrian were rejected by the Joneses. Adrian had documented untreated medical conditions and mental health issues, and he was still being locked in a room, which violated the last order from DSS. Nonetheless, Wheeler and her supervisor signed off, clarifying that there were no concerns and the case would not be moved any further. This means Adrian remains in the home. On February 25th, 2014, DSS receives the ninth call reporting Adrian is being locked in his room. The father is not providing medical and mental help. The ninth call would be assigned a priority level one. Caseworker Amanda Donnelly was assigned to investigate the ninth call. She called to make first contact with the father, who stated the family was living in Kansas and that Adrian was being locked in his room for eating everything in sight. And no, he did not have medical insurance, and he had not met any of the mental health needs. Michael went on to say he didn't believe in modern medicine. Michael would also say that he locked Adrian in the room at night to keep him away from the other children. Lastly, Michael told the worker that it would be best for Adrian if the state took over his care. Donnelly contacted DCFS in Kansas and spoke to caseworker Caitlin White and advised White about the ninth call and the call that she had with the father. On March 3rd, 2014, Donnelly went with the assistance of law enforcement to the home in Missouri just to double check that they were not there. And wouldn't you know it, they were there. Adrian, who appeared to have suspicious marks on his forehead and his chin, sat down and spoke with Donnelly. Adrian disclosed that he's forced to stand in corners. He's forced to stand outside. He has to do jumping jacks all day. He has to do push-ups all day. He isn't fed. In these surroundings, Donnelly sees the filth, animals, dead rats. As the meeting goes on, as she's speaking to Adrian, Adrian shows her 2-inch vertical line marks on his wrist. He said his father taped his arms and legs as a punishment. Donnelly observed the lines. She concluded that the marks appeared older than Adrian's description, but Adrian is 6-7 years, no more than that at the time, but she doesn't consult medical, any of that. She just concludes that they're older than his description, and that's it. The next day, a caseworker by the name of Megan Bruce shows up at the Jones's house. She shows up to do a screening of Michael and Heather for a voluntary placement agreement. The screening consists of a visual assessment and completion of a custody diversion protocol form. Per the caseworker, the parents mark no in response to the question, is there a current allegation of abuse or neglect? They also left the question blank that asked if there's any concerns related to the safety of the child. Adrian was accepted into the voluntary placement program that same day. DCSS referred Adrian to the Family Guidance Center. The Family Guidance Center, FGC, is for placement and mental health treatment. FGC diagnosed Adrian with post-traumatic stress disorder with a GAF score of 24, which determined Adrian qualified for all services. FGC placed Adrian with the Spofford Residential Treatment Center. It was located in Grandview, Jackson County, Missouri. Funding for Adrian's treatment would be provided by Department of Mental Health. Richard Byrd from the Spofford Center, he sent an email to caseworker Bruce advising that Adrian's father adamantly refused to take Adrian back upon completion of the treatment. Byrd was very, very concerned about payment for the residential treatment that would take place and how the father was not willing to take him back. And would the treatment be worth it? During Adrian's placement at Spofford, his medical records were obtained from numerous sources, and they indicated that Adrian had been hospitalized 3 times and had a previous diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder. Adrian's medical records maintained by Spofford revealed Adrian experienced severe abuse and neglect. He exhibited behaviors confirming he suffered severe trauma. They included night terrors, hoarding of food, running away, suicide attempts, homicidal ideations, sexual acting out, aggression, hurting animals and people, and setting fires. During Adrian's placement at Spofford, the parents were required but refused to participate in any of his treatment. There are treatment plans that require them to attend, if only to attend the initial treatment plan meeting. Nonetheless, there were weekly treatment updates, several calls made, with no response from Michael or Heather. Adrian did not have any in-person contact with Heather and Michael for the majority of his time at the placement center. Adrian showed good progress in his treatment at Spofford. Many staff surmised it was because his father and stepmother did not participate or communicate with him for several months. Unfortunately, Spofford determined Adrian's discharge date would be September 4th, 2014. On August 11th, 2017, Chave May, an employee of the FGC, sent an email to Spofford stating that the father and the stepmother would be required to meet the minimum requirements set by FGC and Spofford for Adrian to be discharged into their custody, including a transition period where the father would have to do 3 face-to-face interactions with Adrian per week, family therapy, an overnight family pass. The family must come in to a therapy session. All of this is required and needs to be done within the next 20 days. On August 19th, the Spofford director of therapy sent an email to FGC acknowledging the lack of participation by the father, stating that the father leads a crisis-oriented lifestyle and the father needs to be held accountable. On the 27th of August, Spofford conducted a review of Adrian's treatment plan and estimated a completion date for him and his level of care would be December 13th, 2014. There would be an aftercare plan that included coordination of services with parents, the Spofford staff, a school, a psychiatrist, and the community resources. However, on the 27th of August, Spofford determined Adrian's discharge date will be September 4th, contingent upon Michael and Heather completing the transition plan given on August 11th. On August 28th, a 10th call was made at 12:45, reporting the father is unwilling to meet the needs of Adrian to remove him from placement or to progress his treatment in placement. All of this placement that he had was done because they could not treat his mental illness while he was in the home. And they are not treating it while he's at the center. They're not cooperating. The caller went on to say that Adrian was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, but that Adrian would soon be discharged from the center to his father, and the father is not returning phone calls or cooperating. And the father expressed that he will not follow up on any of the treatment plans and will not follow the instructions of the outpatient care. Caseworker Brittany Burleson was assigned to investigate that 10th call. Her supervisor was Madonna Forthfer. On September 4th, 2014, Spofford discharged Adrian back into the care of his father and stepmother at 8 a.m. They provided the recommendations for Adrian to continue the aftercare plan, including enrollment into out-of-home school and individual therapy. Spofford never followed up on any of the discharge information or treatment plans. September 23rd, caseworker Burleson placed a telephone call to a Crystal Dietz, a DSS caseworker, who advised her that Adrian was discharged to his father, and after discharge, the father moved to Kansas. Without research or verification, caseworker concluded the 10th call, and she reported that it did not meet the conditions for child abuse or neglect to be reported, and that the case would not be opened. She closed the case and her actions were approved the same day by her supervisor. On October 4th, 2014, Heather sent an email to Kiara Oli, Adrian's primary therapist from Stanford Center, stating Adrian was back to the same old stuff that he was doing before that got him put into the center to begin with, and he was having outbursts, and he was threatening to hurt his sisters. She also divulged that Adrian was not enrolled in school, and he was just getting much too worse. On October 9th, 2014, 5 days later, Oli responded to Heather by email. She reminded her of Adrian's treatment plan and the requirements. There are requirements of her and Michael to maintain a structured environment, keep psychiatric appointments, enroll in individual therapy, and enroll in family therapy. She went on to say that if she didn't and Michael couldn't provide any of this care, Adrian should not remain in the home. Oli also advised Heather that failure to enroll Adrian in school is educational neglect, and she should consider making a hotline call to DCFS herself and ask for assistance, since Adrian's safety and the safety of the other children are in jeopardy. Due to her own lack of inability to keep the children safe, Oli never reported the email or the conversation or anything to anyone. All she did was make a note in a closed file. On the 14th of October, DCFS filed an action to collect child support from the biological mother of Adrian on behalf of Adrian's father. DCFS child support case will conclude in May 2015 after all child support monies collected from Adrian's mother were reimbursed for the welfare of DCFS provided to Adrian's father. Between May 2015 and September 28, 2015, Adrian would be forced to eat bugs, whatever he could find in the trash. He would be outside barely clothed for hours. Heather would tase him for 20 seconds at a time. It was stated that in court, the detective, he had everybody silenced for 20 seconds. 20 seconds is a very long time when you're counting it out. And that's how long she would tase Adrian. In Adrian's final days, he spent them strapped to a chair in a shower stall. One of his sisters heard him yell that he was going to die. And that same sibling would tell the police after Adrian's death that Heather told him to suck it up. Adrian's last words were met with hate. Heather would call the police to the home on Thanksgiving 2015 because she was being abused by Michael. She claimed that he shot at her and he was beating her. When the police showed up, she told the officer if he went to the pig pen, he would find remains of the boy. They stopped calling Adrian by his name months ago. He was just called the boy. The police will return the next day with a forensic team. They found the remains of Adrian. They would arrest Michael first and later arrest Heather. Jen Hoovers was the owner and landlord for the home where Adrian died. Hoovers would be asked by Heather to retrieve photos of her children from her iCloud. She made this request after her arrest, sometime after her arrest. When Hoovers logged into Heather's iCloud, she began scrolling through. She found a large quantity of horrific photos and videos, all depicting abuse onto Adrian. There was a video of him shivering as he stood outside, shackled wearing just a t-shirt and pajama pants. Shortly before 6 p.m. on a January evening, per Hoover's, it's really cold that time of year. In another video, Adrian desperately tries to drink a cup of water. He can't pick up because his wrists are handcuffed behind his back. Adrian was also forced to sit in a filthy water that had collected in an unused swimming pool for hours. There was a close-up photo of Adrian's mouth. It showed his lips covered in sores. Investigators deemed they were from him trying to eat through a piece of plywood that held him prisoner in the shower stall. Hoovers took the images to the police shortly after Heather Jones had been sentenced. The horrific evidence would not be used in her case, but it would be used in Michael's. Adrian's two sisters are now 12 and 7. They are in foster care undergoing intensive therapy. This was revealed by the grandmother. It is unknown why she does not have custody of these two children. The grandmother's last time seeing all three children was Christmas 2012, even though in 2014, Michael Jones called the grandmother to tell her that Adrian was in a psychiatric hospital because he had turned into a pedophile. The grandmother would say in an interview that she doesn't know why they gave Adrian back to his father because she would have been happy to take him. However, there are not any records of her petitioning for custody of any of the three Jones kids. November 2016, Heather was sentenced to 25 years for first degree murder. In April 2017, the performance audit prepared by State of Kansas found that DCF did not respond to all reports to the call center in a timely manner. May 8, 2017, Michael Jones would be sentenced to 25 years to life for first degree murder. August 27, 2017, a lawsuit for $25 million in punitive damages was filed on behalf of Adrian's three sisters, biological mother, and grandmother against all the workers that failed Adrian. This concludes the case of Adrian Jones, a child who lost his life way too soon. All source documents, links, and photos can be found on the website, beyondevilpodcast.com. Remember, the images are very disturbing. Once again, we are not trying to sensationalize anyone by publishing the photos, and we do not wish to further victimize Adrian. Our goal is purely accountability. The government system and social services are required to protect children. They failed Adrian. By publishing this case, we hope to shine light on these failures and cause the world to take a stand. Thank you again for spending your time with me. If you would like to see an unedited, highly opinionated version of this case, head on over to YouTube, look for Beyond Evil Podcast, and you will see me, your host, Kimberly Carroll. If you like what you've heard, please leave a review or a comment. It would greatly be appreciated. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow. And tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to come on over and join the Beyond Evil crew. Thank you again.